to a very cold episode of the Image Doctors.
Extremely cold, actually.
I'm Jason O'Dell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And we are coming to you this morning, very early in the morning, from the Maroon Bells in Aspen, Colorado.
That's right. Very famous Colorado landmark. You've probably seen photos of it if you've looked at nature calendars in the U.S. We'll throw some photos on the site, but you could almost say cliche, but it's such a beautiful place that it transcends cliche. But, you know, mountains with reflecting lake in front of them, and we've got aspens that are turning yellow right now, some snow just from the night before, and it was about 20 degrees Fahrenheit, or looking at my little thermometer thing on my coat,
it was even colder
minus 8 Celsius. So, I think that was actually a little bit later on when it was starting to warm up, so it may have been more like 15 Fahrenheit or something like that, but it was cold.
And we were shivering out there, and that was with the chemical hand warmers and the whole deal, but we're back in the car now where it's a little bit warmer.
With the heat going.
But we figured we'd give you a little bit about our location, what we were doing, and what we were using.
Kind of a follow-up to the landscape thing
exactly.
That we discussed in the other episode.
So we both came out here today with our D2X, get some tripods. Carbon fiber is really nice in the cold, although it was so cold this morning,
matter.
It didn't really matter. after about 10 minutes of setting up, I couldn't feel my fingers anyway.
No.
Good gloves and long underwear, you know, all the things that you need to try to stay warm. And we were sort of perched on the side of the lake, on the shore, just up on the edge. And there was, how many people were here this morning?
I think there were at least 60 people out there.
Yeah, and this was at...
I stopped counting at that point.
This was at 6 a.m. when we got here. Got here about 6:30 this morning. And there was already a ton of people out there on the shore. So we got a spot, and that would be pretty good. And then we set up our tripods. We had split neutral density filters.
Yeah, played with a bunch of different types in my case.
And I was mostly using my three-stop soft grad filter. I also played a little bit with taking multiple exposures, bracketing, and maybe I'll do a little combining of those in Photoshop or something later on. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I did a little bit of that, but mainly used grads. And I started off with a two-stop soft before the sun came up, and then switched to a three-stop hard, and even went to a stacked three-stop hard and one-stop hard, you know, for a four-stop total. So did a bunch of different things. A little bit of polarization dialed in, not too much.
Just, right, I used a teeny bit.
Yeah, and I... of course, one of the related things is I had the grad filters in a Coke and pee holder, and those things, if you've used one, you know, it's got a slot in the back for holding a rotating polarizer, and I had one in just to dial in just a slight bit of polarization.
So you had it all going on.
I had it all gone, but the only problem was then later on when I wanted to get that thing out of there, my hands were so cold, I couldn't feel anything in the process of trying to get the filter out of there. I cut up my fingers, and they started bleeding all over everything I had.
I looked over at you, and you had all this red stuff there. It's so cold, you don't even know. You have no idea what's going on.
I've got blood on my pack. I've got blood on the cute little gold ring on the front of the lens. It's got
excellent.
Blood
That's like battle damage or something.
Blood on the tripod head.
Blood on the tripod. That could be a country western Nikonian song. How about that?
It's very manly, really.
Now, as far as lenses went, I used my 17-55 for almost everything.
Yeah.
I had a few shots with the 70-200. I saw you had yours out, too, for a little bit.
Yeah, the same thing. I didn't need anything wider. It was the 17-55 was plenty wide for where we were shooting.
In fact, I was using it all the way zoomed into 55 for some of the shots.
Yeah,
when the sun hit the peak, it was really beautiful this morning. That's the one thing, when you're freezing your butt off here and you do get nice light, it is worth it.
Oh, it's a gorgeous spot.
After
even if your photos don't come out good, it's still beautiful.
Now, we saw everybody and their cousin out here today. I mean, we saw large format. I mean, we're talking old school, large format, hood underneath, head underneath the cloth, large format.
Right. Cool stuff.
Guys were still shooting film. I saw some panoramic backs out there. Just all kinds of cameras.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some really silly things that I had to chuckle about. You know, some person had their clearly pretty expensive digital camera. I think it was maybe one of those new Sony Alphas or something, on about a $20 tripod in the middle of the lake, in the water, that looked like it was going to
tip over. With the column cranked up all the way.
Yeah, and it looked like this tripod had a leg spread of about, 2 feet from tip to tip.
Yeah.
And it was just an accident waiting to happen.
We were just cringing, waiting for it to fall into the lake, but it didn't while we were there, fortunately.
No. And I would say there was a pretty healthy mix of cameras out there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of Nikon users out this morning.
Oh, yeah.
We ran into some people from the Rocky Mountain School of Photography.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the instructors said he uses a D2X,
yep.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty good mix. You see a lot of stuff anymore. Certainly not one brand or another, and that's good.
Now, we aren't going to stay here all day. This is sort of just a little fun trip, side trip for us this morning up here in Aspen, Colorado. But one thing to keep in mind, and this is something that Bob Chris talked a little bit about in his podcast that he did with us, is when you're going to a place like this, which is very photographed, you know, over photographed even, try to do something different. Try to get a different angle or go to a different spot or get it from it. And we didn't really have a whole lot of time to do that.
And we were too cold to do it.
Yeah, at some point when you'd stop feeling your feet and your fingers, you're too cold to really care. But
that is one of the challenges, I have to say, is you start getting really, really cold and then your motivation just drops. But I think we did all right. I think we got some good shots. If it had been warmer, we probably would have gotten a whole lot more, but that's the way it is.
Yes, certainly.
We thought we were going to be coming up on a relatively nice fall day, but we stepped right into the middle of winter.
Yeah, here it is in September, and we had a freak snowstorm here in Colorado. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's a good 3 inches of snow on the ground, I'd say.
Yeah.
And, you know, up here at altitude, this is, well, Aspen, Colorado, is about 7,900 feet, so a little over 2,000 meters. And we're higher than that here. We're probably up around 9,000 plus feet, so 3,000 meters or so.
Where we're at right now is just right in the middle of a very nice evergreen and aspen forest with mountains all around us. And
a lot of cars in this parking lot.
Oh, my God. It wasn't bad when we first got here, but now it's just absolutely and completely full. And it does really bring up one of the challenges, and we talked a little bit about it when we were doing the shoot down in southern Texas. And as you recall, one of the truly great things about that is we were just out there by ourselves, and there was no one else around, so you had more of a nature experience. This is wonderful, but boy, there are a bazillion people here. It's just such a popular place.
And I mean, we were here early, and we got one of the last actual parking spots in this lot.
Yeah.
If you want to come up to Aspen and shoot the Maroon Bells, they close the parking lot to automobile traffic fairly early in the morning, probably by about 8. So what you want to do is get here very early.
Check the website for details on the times. We were coming earlier enough.
If you come in the middle of the day, they run a bus, and you have to take a shuttle bus, and that can be kind of a pain. Now, the nice thing about this spot, though, is you could come here in the middle of the day and still get great pictures.
Yeah.
Just the way the lake lights up. It was a little bit too windy this morning to get any really good reflections off that lake, but, you know, you have to get lucky. But it's free to get in. Doesn't cost anything. And we just kind of snuck up the road in the dark and did our thing along with 60 other people. So that kind of brings us to, we thought this would be a nice follow-up to our landscape podcast from a couple weeks ago. And so when we get somewhere, we're going to go down and get some coffee or hot chocolate or something, because I'm freezing.
Yeah.
And you can probably tell we're shivering here, you know, and get the heater cranked up in my car. And when we get back, we'll talk more about the rest of the podcast for this episode.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya. Now that we're back in from the cold and we've defrosted ourselves.
Yeah, just a little bit warmer.
Back to the mountain lair here. We thought we'd spend the rest of our podcast today talking about something related to landscape photography, and that's panoramic shots.
Yep. But first, Just a little note, there is a new version of Adobe Lightroom.
That's right.
Although it's now called Adobe Photoshop Lightroom, I think. It's the beta 4 version. And if you get a chance, that's worth a download. I took a look at it just yesterday when it first came out, and it's looking awfully good. There have been some big improvements in it since the beta 3 version, which had some interesting ideas but was pretty awkward in the develop module, and that's where you do the raw conversion. The new version has some streamlining in there, as well as some new functions coming out of raw shooter, and it's looking very solid, I think, especially for people that are processing a lot of images, and this includes some of the people that were fans of raw shooter. There's some stuff there that you really ought to take a look at and you might like for some of your work. So we'll do a follow-up on that.
So the software parade continues.
Yeah, we'll do a follow-up on that later in a future episode. But
right.
Take a peek at it.
And speaking of software updates, in case you haven't noticed, Nikon kind of quietly updated Capture 4. This is the previous version of Nikon right. Capture, to version 4.4.2. If you're using the, at least I know in the United States, if you're using the software update module, the automatic update, it should come up there on that. Mm-hmm. And what 4.4.2 does is that it goes and addresses some of the issues that people had a few months ago when NX was first released. Namely, 4.4.2 will now read the D2XS NEF format, and it's also going to support the NEF files that come out of the firmware updated D2X.
Right.
So that's a nice thing, I thought,
yeah,
just for them to do that.
So certainly if you have 4.4 and are using it, you ought to do that update. I think it also pulls in some minor
bug fixes
too.
Right.
So there's no reason not to.
Now, panoramic shots can be achieved in a bunch of different ways, but usually we see them, these are landscapes where they're much longer than they are tall. So we're talking about shots here where the aspect ratio is typically different. Doesn't have to be, but typically it's those long, sort of skinny shots.
Right. Or they could be vertical,
Vertical
too.
Skinny shots. So this would be an ideal subject for a panoramic. Might be something like a mountain range or a skyscraper. I've seen panoramic shots of like the Chrysler Building from New York City that are absolutely wonderful.
Right. And, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about creative ideas, things to get you out of the rut, and panoramas are wonderful for that, because you're breaking out of that 2:3 aspect ratio that you have with a 35 millimeter camera or Nikon digital SLRs. And it just gives you a whole different way of thinking and looking at the world.
So the easiest way to make a panoramic shot is to just crop your image that way.
It could be a wide angle shot.
That's right.
It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. Although if you're thinking about some wide vista landscape shot, since you're getting rid of parts of the image, you're probably going to want to start with a fairly wide angle shot.
Mm-hmm.
But where cropping can also come in handy is if you've got moving subjects in the frame,
right,
where one image is going to need to suffice.
Right. Now, the opposite end of that in terms of an expense category, cropping is cheap and easy, and you can do that with pretty much any camera.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's digital or film. You could always do a film scan and do the same thing. The opposite end would be buying some dedicated panoramic camera.
There's
some really expensive ones, like, you know, some of the Fuji 6x17, and I think there's a Linhof like that. I'm not sure if it's still made.
We saw at least one person in Aspen at the Maroon Bells shooting a panoramic back on
the
camera.
Yeah, I think it was a Fuji 6x17 or something like that. It was something of that size.
So these cameras, they're going to use multiple frames and expose them together. Is that right? Or do they use special film?
Depending on the model of camera, it might use roll film, like the Fuji and the Linhof. That just uses 120 or 220 film. And if you use something like the one that I have, which is a Hasselblad X-Pan, that uses 35 millimeter film and exposes it in a 24 millimeter by 65 millimeter wide frame. It's just extra wide. Uses a lens that doesn't look much bigger than a normal 35 millimeter lens, but actually has the covering power of a medium format lens. And those are a blast to use. They're a lot of fun. I used mine on on the trip I took to Australia not too long ago. It was a lot of fun. But you don't have to necessarily.
So that's sort of our extreme.
Yeah, those are the extremes.
You can go
those
one frame and crop it. You can go with a dedicated panoramic camera and throw money at a system for that.
Or you can do the middle route, which is pretty darn good lately, especially with digital cameras.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And that's stitching. And the idea there is you take multiple shots. It can be as few as two.
It could be as many as you want to be.
I've heard of even more than that. Yeah. You know, some outrageous things. And then use software to stitch the images together and get something that's wider and larger or taller too.
Mm-hmm. And now the advantage of doing it that way is, first of all, you can really get some incredible detail because let's say you're trying to shoot the same field of view or the same angle of view with three frames, you might be able to cover that with a 50 or a 35 millimeter lens in three frames that you would need maybe a 20 millimeter lens to do it in one frame.
Right.
So if you think about it, you know, you think about the detail that you're going to get because everything is magnified larger for the equal picture, you can get an incredibly detailed image doing the image stitching. The other thing that you can do is think about the megapixels if you're shooting digital. Your 6 megapixel D70 doesn't sound like much if you're shooting with a 12 to 24 millimeter lens, but shoot with a larger lens, a longer lens, and stitch together four pictures, you now have a 24 megapixel camera.
Yeah.
Or something like
that. Yeah, maybe a little bit less with the overlap you have to do, but you get the point. Yeah.
So the idea of what you're going to do technique-wise, and this is where things get a little bit, where you have to pay a little bit of attention, is you need to shoot images. You're obviously going to need to use a tripod.
Actually, you can get by without one pretty well. I mean,
you have to crop after the fact, I think, a little bit. But if you're trying to do it and be precise about it, you should be using a tripod. And the simple thought of it is, well, I'm just going to have a panning head and I'm going to tilt that. It's very important that, not tilt that, but you're going to just pan. And you want to leave a little bit of overlap.
About 20% or so.
Each of your frames, so that things can be aligned later on in your software choice. And we'll get into software in a little bit down the road. The tricky part comes from making sure that everything is set up right. So the first thing you're going to have to do is really make sure that your tripod is level. Because otherwise, as you pan around, you're not going to have a nice level horizon across your images.
Yeah, one thing that's kind of good to do is if you have a way of leveling it, little bubble level or something like that, use that. If you don't have that, do a test pass. In other words, start and then swing through and see what happens to the composition. If you start off, you know, with the water being, you know, let's say you've got some ocean in there or something like that, and it's a third of the way up in the frame, and by the time you swing it over to the right where you're going to end up, it's out of the picture, you know you've got a leveling problem.
And it's easy to screw that up.
It is.
So it's going to take some trial and error. Now, the other issue, and if you're really hardcore about this stuff, is something called the nodal point of the lens, which I don't have a good definition for. Do you?
Not off the top of my head.
The idea is that what you should be pivoting around is when you think about your camera mounted on a tripod head, you've mounted the base of the camera on the tripod. So the pivot point is the more or less the film plane. But where you want the pivot point to be is on the what's called the nodal point of the lens. So think of the pivot point as being somewhere out in the middle of your lens. It depends on the lens itself. So
To get really good, truly... You want to swing around that point.
You want to swing around that point, which was going to be, you know, maybe 6 or 8 inches in front of the film plane, depending on the lens that you're using.
Right.
So there's some really neat accessories available designed to allow your camera to pivot around this, quote, nodal point. And without going into a lot of details, really right stuff is probably the one place where I would look to get these. And they have a whole section on their store webpage of doing panoramas.
Right.
And equipment designed for it.
And that's a pretty fancy way of doing it.
And yeah, you'll spend some money doing that.
I will say if you're just looking to join a few pictures and there are subjects that are out at a good distance, you know, out there kind of at infinity, you can do remarkably well without those.
Exactly.
You don't feel like
you have to. This is not a mandatory component. This is just when you're, if you start doing this for a living, you might want to get
into I haven't invested in that. You know, it might be nice at some point, but I haven't done
it. Invested in everything else.
Well, I know.
Now, there's another way you can achieve this without having to even rotate your camera.
Right.
Or without pivoting it, and that's using a tilt-shift lens.
Yeah.
And there's two of those from Nikon that I know of, the 28 and the 35 millimeter PC tilt-shift
lenses.
Yeah,
these are both
shift.
Yeah, they're actually shift lenses. They don't tilt.
Okay.
Yeah. But those both work, and the idea there is you take a couple shots with your camera fixed.
And you're shifting the lens.
Yeah, you're shifting the lens, and then you stitch them together, and you don't have the perspective problems that you would. It gets you some of the same benefits as, you know, doing the nodal point stuff. But, you know, that's another fairly expensive option. You know, the shift lenses sell for, you know, at least like $250-$300 used and on up into, you know,
right,
$500 or so.
And there is no, right now, there's no wide angle shift lens for digital. But on the other hand, like what we're saying, if you're putting together multiple images, the super wide focal length is not necessarily what you want to achieve, unless you want to do some weird 180 degree or 360 degree panorama. And I've seen those done too, where they go all the way around.
Right.
That's kind of interesting. One thing what we will do though is we want to direct you to the dedicated Nikonians forum to discuss shooting panoramas, and that's exactly what it's called. It's called the Shooting Panoramas Forum, and it's in there in the technical shooting issues section of the forums. So you should check that out, because a lot of these questions will be answered there, and the people who post in there are very knowledgeable and have done this for a long time. They're going to know exactly what kind of equipment you might want, give their recommendations, and review the various software.
Right.
Which is the next component of shooting this. If you're going to put multiple images together, you have to have a way of doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got some of these images, and let's talk about some other shooting tips first.
Okay.
Because what you want to do is get a set of images that have the same exposure, same white balance, same focus point.
Same aperture. Everything.
Yeah. You don't want that varying, otherwise you'll end up with problems at the joins between the photos, and that'll create something that looks uneven and unattractive. So if you are using a digital camera, then what you want to do is put it on manual exposure so you can keep that constant. If you're shooting JPEGs, then you want to have your white balance set on one fixed setting so that doesn't vary. You want to have your tone compensation, you know, the contrast level set on one setting so it doesn't vary on you, because the camera could do that if you just leave it on automatic. And you want to turn it off of autofocus and put it on manual focus, so that's fixed as well. It isn't changing around. If you're shooting RAW, then some of those things won't necessarily matter. It might make it simpler with some RAW packages, but with most of them it doesn't matter because you can always override it. But certainly the manual exposure and the turning off autofocus is a good thing to do. And then that way you end up with some photos.
Now, could you shoot at aperture priority and be good with that for the most part? Because depending on how big your...
No.
So that's not smart.
No, it's not smart, because if you think about it, as you're swinging your camera around, you're going to get different subject matter. And so the exposure will vary on you, at least potentially.
Well, the shutter speed would.
Yeah, but but that's changing the exposure,
So things might look different on the overlap points.
Exactly. If the exposure changes, it will. It'll look different at that.
Especially
that
with skies, like in the corners of your frame.
Those are the worst.
Yeah, that's where you'll find it a lot. So
you definitely want to use manual exposure.
So, again, that takes a little practice.
Yeah.
But if you're shooting digital, hey, it's just electrons, right?
Right.
You have some time to fool with it.
Right. And then what you'll want to do is create some TIFFs or JPEGs. And then you can use a variety of software packages to merge them together. Mm-hmm.
This is where something like a batch save in one of the RAW converters would be very useful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And just save it all the same way. Make sure you've applied the same settings. You know, especially with RAW, if you did decide to change something after the fact, well, then apply those same settings.
And that's exactly the way I've done it, and it's worked great.
Because you might want to tweak the white balance setting off of what the camera said or something like that.
Right.
So now you've got this folder presumably you've saved these all in a nice separate folder that you've labeled
that makes
such and such panorama, just for the sake of argument. And then you're going to bring these in and you need to link them together into one giant TIFF or JPEG file.
Right. And usually I'll do TIFFs just because that's usually what I'm working with when I'm doing stuff. There's everything from a manual approach to, you know, stuff that's pretty automated. On the manual side, you could use something like Photoshop CS2 or Elements and then manually do an operation where you take the two images and overlay them
in layers.
And do a few things with opacity to make it easier to see where they align. And that's certainly one approach.
But both of those,
it is, and I don't like doing it.
Now, so Photoshop CS2 does have an automated version of that, right?
And Elements does too.
And it's okay.
Yeah, both programs do a decent job of merging images together. The only thing I've found is that under some circumstances, the joins are still a little bit visible, and you can see a boundary there, and especially in the skies. Sometimes they're fine, but a little bit more often than not,
there's a problem. So if you don't want to do that, I'm going to guess that there's probably lots of different... I'm guessing that there's lots of software manufacturers who sort of leaped on this.
You are correct.
Am I correct on that one?
If there's a niche to fill,
this is
people will jump in. And the nice thing about panoramic tools is they're fairly simple, so you know a lot of different companies can do them. The one I've used for some time now is a thing called Panorama Maker. It's made by a company called ArcSoft. It works very well. I'm using the
We'll post
version
a link
3.
To some of these websites
yeah.
online.
I'm using version 3, and we were just checking. It looks like there's a version 4 out, so I'll have to check that out. But the one I've got works just fine, and for a while, Nikon was shipping it along with some of their cameras. So take a look in the box that your camera came in if you have
that.
Yeah, and maybe it's with it. I can't remember which models it came with.
I just didn't go to digital early enough in my photography career, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's a whole other one. There's Panorama Tools, Panorama Factory, RealViz, Stitcher Pro, which is another sort of high-end one.
Yeah, and we haven't gone through and done a
I don't own any of these. So, but that's just a short list. If you go into our Shooting Panoramas forum and poke around or do a Nikoscope search, www.nikoscope.com, and search for Panorama software, you're going to find gobs of hits because it's just all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah. Now, when it comes time to printing these things, so you know, you've joined them all together and now you've got this image that's you know really long in one dimension and kind of short in the other, you know, how do you print that? Well, there are a few options. You could use roll paper
that
if
would
you
be
wanted
a good
to.
Option.
So if you were
Some of the Epson printers
really,
really
long,
support huge
yep.
banners.
Right. For a while, Epson was actually making some panoramic paper that you could buy. It wasn't the best paper I found, though. Didn't produce really great images, and they've discontinued it.
I don't know what's out there now.
But it was, you know, something like 8.5 by 24 or something like that. It was kind of nice dimensions. You could also take some bigger print sizes, something like a 13 by 19, and then cut it. You know, just print a portion of it. That works.
I've done that where I just print on the, you know, I get the 19-inch length or width that I want and then just use a paper trimmer to cut the paper down later.
Yeah, that's what I've done a lot lately, too. And certainly you can always send it out somewhere, too, and, you know, a place that can print in extra large sizes. So it's really not too hard, and chances are the printer that you have will support, you know, one of those options that we just discussed.
And I think the roll papers do come in a variety of widths.
Yeah,
they do. So you can get some narrow width roll paper and plug it in. And
you can even get the you know stuff that's 13 inches wide or wider than that for the bigger printers, and then just cut it yourself.
Right.
You know, some arbitrary length that you're
length.
Interested in. So there are a bunch of options. But the nice thing about panoramic images is they look different enough from an average image that they have impact just by virtue of the format.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, they work. So anything else you want to add? Did we miss something?
I think those are the main things. We probably missed something or other, but those are the main things.
Well, if we
things.
Did miss something and you want us to bring to talk about it next week, or 2 weeks from now, I should say, do send us an email to talkradio at Nikonians.org, and we will be sure to answer you right away. And if we deem you worthy, we'll answer your question on the air. I was having a Wayne's World moment there.
Yeah.
We have a few errata to correct from last week, or just one or two. We had mentioned something about links to sharpening settings, and we apologize. I thought there was a website that had these things published. I was wrong. There isn't. I'll try to get something up somewhere and to update maybe my own webpage or something. We can post it, or we can post some suggested settings in the forum for the podcast forum. But we don't have a link for that. We do have links to the sharpening book, and they're on our show notes page at podcasts.nikonians.org, and they're there. But I thought there were more resources available for some basic capture sharpening settings, and I was just wrong about them.
Yeah.
So we'll try to rectify that in good time. Now, what are we going to do next time? We have some ideas for some upcoming podcasts.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're always asking you guys to submit your suggestions for a show, so we're still open to that.
Yeah. But some of the things that we've got on our to-do list include a review of Photomechanic,
which is a piece of
software that both of us have been using recently to do downloads and lots of other good things.
Download your images from the camera, manage images, sort of rank them.
Yeah, do comparisons.
We've been using it now for a couple of months, and I think the short answer is that we're both going to go out and buy it.
Yeah, I already did.
I'm going to pony up for it too.
It's
a good piece of software.
Last year, before the holidays, we did a popular podcast.
Is it getting to the holidays again?
Shopping list.
I know.
Photographer's shopping list. All sorts of good stocking stuffers and things like that. That you can suggest to your spouse.
Because if we didn't give you ways to spend your money, where would we be as your good fellow Nikonians talk radio hosts?
Yeah.
I mean,
certainly would not be living up to our reputation.
I know.
Yeah.
So we'll try to bring that in the next few weeks. That'll be coming up.
Probably a Photokina discussion, I think.
Yep, Photokina is going on this week, so hopefully when the fallout has settled out, we'll have an idea from that.
And then we are intending to do we keep promising this, but the topic on the 17-35, 17-55, and 28-70 lenses, we will discuss that in a future episode.
We'll just wrap your tongue around your forehead now. Can you tell us the end of the day? It's a long day.
It's been a long day.
Well, I can say this. I shot my 17-55 at the Maroon Bells and looked at the images now at 100%, and they are sharp from edge to edge.
And that's exactly the way mine look, too.
So I'm totally happy with that.
Yeah.
But we'll go and do a comparison for you.
Yep.
Okay, well, hopefully we've satisfied your Nikon bug for this installment, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of The Image Doctors.
All right, talk to you then.
Okay, bye-bye.